This is Joseph Giacobelli. I'm an analyst, investor, author, and the host of the Asia Climate Finance Podcast, which is a philanthropic series dedicated to the promotion of knowledge and discussion on sustainable finance in Asia from the perspective of the business of decarbonization and the energy transition in the region, which consumes about half of the world's energy and electricity. Please support this effort by liking and by subscribing to the podcast. Hi, and welcome to the 25th episode of the Asia Climate Finance Podcast. My name is Joseph Giacobelli, and I am your host. This is the second episode of 2023. And allow me to wish you again a very happy, healthy, and safe new year. This year, we're looking at topics in a little bit more depth, and we're going to try to have as many case studies as possible. In the first episode of the year, we talked about the smart grid and real estate and the impact of decarbonization and the energy transition. And in this episode, we're talking about the electric vehicle charging business. Our guest is the Chief Executive Officer of Cornerstone Technologies Holdings, Mr. Vincent Yip Siu Hong. Cornerstone Technologies is an electric vehicle charging solutions company based in Hong Kong, specializing in the supply and installation of a wide variety of EV chargers, infrastructure, and central management systems. And I think it is one of the key kind of pieces to the puzzle of decarbonization. Not only is it important, obviously, for us to shift from internal combustion engine vehicles to electric vehicles, but also EV charging points may have other functions as well, such as battery storage, and there's other solutions such as vehicle to grid. So it is a very, very important portion of the decarbonization puzzle. Please continue to support my project by liking and by subscribing to the podcast. Enjoy the show. So I just want to welcome Vincent Yip, the CEO of Cornerstone Technologies. Vincent, I'm very, very, very grateful for your time. I know you're busy. You're in a busy sector and you have a busy schedule. So I really appreciate your time. How are you today, Vincent?
Good. Thank you so much for inviting me. It's my pleasure to have the opportunity to share our industry with the audience here.
So, Vincent, again, thank you for participating today. Could we just start with you, perhaps, just introducing yourself a little bit about your background?
So I have actually have a wandering path for my career. I actually started as an engineering student, and I did computer science. So I have my sort of technology platform and know-how back then. But I've never worked in the technology sector until now. I started as a management consultant with McKinsey, I spent almost 12 years with McKinsey in the Greater China office. Then after that, I've actually moved into other sectors, including education, and then in retail, and then in a bit of real estate. Have been in various different management capacity. It's really wandering across the various different sector, and now it's sort of back to my root where I've actually done my degree. I finally get to have the chance to start on a technology business where I can lead the company in a very exciting industry, which is the EV infrastructure, EV charging industry.
That's great, and I really again appreciate the fact that we're going to be focusing mostly on your actual business. But I guess as a quick intro to the global market, so to speak. We know that the global electric vehicle market, EV market, is massive, and it's going to grow multiple folds. Depending on whose numbers you're looking at, whether it's IEA or some of the consultants like McKinsey. I think there was a number very recently that predicted that the market would be worth something like $1.1 trillion by 2030 from about $200 billion in 2021. But I mean, there's also some numbers out there and there's other variables, but it is a very, very big market with lots of potential. Part of the EV, so we're not going to talk about the market too much, but I guess, you know, Vincent, you can allude to it, but I wanted to focus on your actual business. So can we talk about, you know, EV charging first? What is it exactly? Are you just an operator of a petrol station or something? Or what's the EV charging all about?
To some extent, yes, we are sort of the equivalent of a petrol station to the old, you know, gas powered cars. In the EV world. On the other hand, I think the whole business model in terms of the value chain and how the various different players act out in the EV sector is slightly different from the old petrol station model, right? Let's talk about what we do, and then maybe compare and contrast to some of the big oil players and how they look at it, right?
Right.
For us, we consider ourselves as a one-stop shop, EV charger solution provider. So what that means is that we design and develop our own chargers hardware. We will have contract manufacturers to do the manufacturing. Once we get the hardware, we also have to have the software platform, both in terms of backend control and the consumer facing apps and all those things, right? To integrate the whole solutions together. Then this is the point where there are different business model come in place, right? We could sell the whole solutions to another operator, another infrastructure owner, and and run with it. That's sort of a one project based model. Of course, we will do the installation, we will do the testing and commissioning, we'll do the ongoing maintenance, etc., etc. So here, we are the hardware provider, we're the software provider, we are the contract company, we are the construction company, and we're the main. So this is sort of one business model. The other model, we don't sell it to others, but we actually go for the B2C routes ourselves directly. So we make the investments and we install all the hardware and the software, and we operate ourselves. We charge the consumer under different models. We are really taking care of the whole value chain, right? From the hardware side to all the way to the marketing and sales to the consumer front. If you look at the oil company, obviously they would do quite a lot of these from a sales and marketing perspective, finding sites and operating. But they probably don't do their own infrastructure or they don't do their own equipment. That's slightly the difference. The other difference I would say is we don't generate the electricity ourselves. We get the electricity from the traditional power company. This would be largely just like in the oil world, right? We don't do our own drilling. So we don't control our own whole supply chain. So we have to be dependent on the power company. So this puts us into a situation where there are plus and there are minuses, right? On the plus side, obviously we don't have to bear the heavy investment into the whole power generation game.
Right.
On the other hand, our supply, our core, your energy supply, it's dependent on the local player, the power generator. So this is how the industry is evolving at this point. There are many changes that are taking place. I think there are mergers and acquisitions. There are power companies getting downstream into this EV charging business. There are EV charging business trying to get all the way up. And there are also oil companies trying to switch from petrol stations to the EV charging model. So it's very dynamic, but you know, it's fun. You know, it's an interesting arena where, you know, everybody is trying to figure out what's the best way going forward.
And Vincent, just to go back, or I should say go up 30,000 feet. So I think most listeners, we know about regulated electric power markets and deregulated electric power markets. Is there a difference? And I mean, this is not kind of specific to your company. That's what I'm trying to say. But more just from a general perspective, is there a difference to where an EV charging business operates in a regulated electric power market like Hong Kong versus a deregulated electric power market like Australia or Europe or others?
I think, you know, as mentioned, right, you know, a EV charging operator, you know, one of the key cost component, you know, it's obviously the energy, you know, the electricity getting from the grid. And so, you know, whether under a regulated market or under an unregulated market will, you know, have, you know, significant bearings, you know, in terms of the cost of electricity. In general, obviously, you know, the market competition will help to drive down the cost, and you know, there will be competition and things like that. So that is something that, you know, on the plus side, you know, deregulated market, you know, can be beneficial, you know, for us. You know, on the other hand, I think, this is not for us to choose in a way, because, you know, the power company structure and the whole sort of regulatory regime, you know, is market by market, right? And we tend to look at more of the market forces, from a supply and demand on the EV, demand perspective, right, rather than, you know, the power, you know, infrastructure. At the end of the day, right, I think, the electricity prices, you know, is quite transparent, you know, to the consumer in a lot of the markets. And you know, for a CPO, for a charge point operator like us, right, you know, it's fairly common that, you know, we essentially pass on, you know, the electricity costs, to the consumer, and making a margin, you know, to cover our, you know, expenses in terms of investment of the charging infrastructure and also our services that's being provided. So you know, overall, I think, you know, it doesn't make a big difference for us in terms of the margin per se. It sort of, you know, work it out, you know, itself, you know, as it, you know, goes along. I think more importantly, it's actually, you know, the stance for the power company on how they look at EV charging, whether they see it as complementary, your business that they want to get into, a strategic business that they want to get into, or, you know, is it, you know, this is, you know, something that, you know, let's just let the market work it out themselves. You know, the CPO will be doing their own thing. You know, they focus on their own, you know, power generation. I think that is probably, you know, more important. So if you look at China, for example, China, the power companies themselves actually put in a lot of money and investments into, you know, providing EV chargers. You know, so it's good for the EV market, you know, the EV drivers. On the other hand, for the EV operator, it's a bit more difficult because they need to compete directly with the government-backed power generation companies. Versus, you know, if you look at Hong Kong, the two power companies, yes, they do have some EV chargers, you know, that are out there in the market. On the other hand, you know, that's not their main business, and those are not the things that are really under the regulatory regime, you know, for them. They treat it as a side business, and we work with them very closely to sort of build out the infrastructure, and that, you know, makes our job in some ways, you know, easier to be their partners rather than their competitors.
Right. So having talked a little bit about the different kind of markets and how EV or charging point operators, CPOs, like you call it, operate in these kind of various markets. Could we just touch a little bit, again, at a very high level, very general, 30,000 feet, about different charging technologies, EV charger types? Could you just explain a little bit about what's going on that front? Because I think there's a lot of development and evolution on that front as well, right?
Sure. I think the core technologies right now, for the battery chargers are two types, right? There are the AC chargers and the DC chargers, which are basically the two dominant mode of charging that are out there. Virtually all of the battery powered cars and the battery powered EVs would take both AC and DC. The main difference is also on the speed, the power output. So AC charger, typically we would be talking about 7 kilowatts to about 21 kilowatts hour. Whereas for a DC charger, we are typically looking at 30 kilowatt per hour upwards, some of the faster chargers that are out there, we are looking at 300. Both of them, they have different usage. The way we look at it, it's AC chargers are more suitable, for what we call the destination charging, where the car would probably typically spend a longer time, on the place, like at home or at workplace, even at the shopping mall, where you would spend 2-3 hours, watching a film or things like that. And that will charge up a car. A typical EV, like a Tesla Model 3, right? In about 7 or 8 hours. The advantage of the AC chargers is it's simple. The requirements of the infrastructure is a bit lower. It's significantly less expensive. So it has its place. I think the market has a lot of talk and a lot of focus around DC fast charging. Tesla and then a lot of people, it's sexy, right? Everybody talks about, it can be, it can charge up the car as fast as 15 minutes, for example. On the other hand, I think, this has, a lot of limitations in some ways as well, right? First of all, the power intake, right, by different cars is actually different. I talk about some of the fastest chargers that are out there. Have 350 kilowatt hour power rating, but out on the street, right, very very few cars. Probably two or three types of cars. Can actually take up that power. If you're looking at Teslas, if you're looking at the Mercedes or even the latest, BMW, right? We are talking about 100 to 150 kilowatt hour, in terms of charging speed, right? And that's the average, typical car that are going out there for an EV to be able to, take in sort of, higher power. The overall production cost is significantly higher as well. So there's one limitation that we see in terms of DC fast charging, that there's a limit to it. So that's the first thing. I think on a more practical level, it's also depending on the driving, the mode of driving that is happening, right? If you look at the European countries or the US, where long distance travel, it's more prevalent, right? You need to get on the highway, driving for 300, 400 kilometers on one trip, right? Then, of course, you probably need to stop in the middle, to have a DC fast charging station to sort of top you up, right? But on a typical urban setting, when you are driving, for example, in Hong Kong, right, the typical driver will only drive for 40 kilometers or so per day. Then you don't really have to refuel that fast, right? You might as well just have a home charger at home, and then you trickle in a little bit, 1 or 2 hour, and then you're more than set for the next day, right? So this whole sort of DC versus AC thing, I think it very much depends on the usage. So that's the sort of two core charging method right now. Right. Now then, apart from these things, there is also the battery swapping. That it's some of the car manufacturers, in particularly in China, looking at NIO, it is one of the most sort of aggressive in terms of doing battery swapping in the industry. I think the challenge in battery swapping is that you do have to have the critical mass and enough cars that are out there, you're using the same type of batteries. There's no standardization to it. Most of the European brands or American brands or even the Korean brands, they are not adopting the technology as such. So I think it's more of a market norm, right? And then it will be it is probably not going to be very common going across all of the markets. It'll probably remain a niche technology, at least for the four wheel drive vehicle. But on the other hand, I think for the two wheel drive, the two wheelers, the electric bikes and things like that, I think battery swapping it makes more sense. Because of the size of the battery, the logistics around that, and that would be more common. Those are the sort of technologies that are out there right now. If you are looking at the future, there are wireless charging that people are talking about. They are under trial. Fundamentally the power mechanism, everything is the same. It's just that the charging method is no longer charged through a cable, but it's actually using wireless technology. The same as your phone charger nowadays. But it's still again not very common right now. The main issue is around cost, it's around adoption by the brands, things like that. So I would say that is probably still quite a few years away in terms of being adopted. And then it's completely your alternative way of powering the car, which is using fuel cell rather than the normal lithium batteries that we're typically seeing in a lot of EVs at this point. I think some of the Japanese brands like Toyota, it's a big proponent of fuel cell technology. I think fuel cell technologies has a lot of merits to it. Because is trying to generate electricity through hydrogen and water, through hydrogen and with water coming out as the byproduct, it's really environmental friendly, and also very efficient, because it's just like old gas new cars, right? You basically put in hydrogen into your car, like gas, right? And then you'll use that to generate the power. So the refilling speed is actually a lot faster than EVs. And the power generated, the sort of power to weight ratio, it's higher. So it would actually suit the heavy vehicles, trucks, buses, quite well. On the other hand, I think the challenges is around the infrastructure. It's you're transporting your hydrogen is not easy. It can be dangerous. Also adoption in terms of whether the brands are actually adopting it. I think a lot of these technology and technological choices has to do with adoption, right? We keep on talking about the VHS versus the Betamax of story, right? Betamax has been a good technology in a lot of aspects, but just because a lot of the industry has took on VHS, it becomes the dominant format. It's similar where your batteries is has been taken up by all of the major players really at this point, and fuel cell is sort of a lacking alternative right now. So whether people will actually switch, that is a very big question mark. So I would say, right, in the near future, without your major breakthrough, battery vehicles is probably the way to go. With the EV charging infrastructure that goes with it, that would be the dominant sort of area, you know, coming along, unless there's a major breakthrough somewhere.
And even then, it will take, you know, once something else is invented, adoption will take a while. It's not going to take, it's not going to be overnight. But one area of the charging kind of charging point operation is the digital side of things. And I'm aware, and actually in the book that I published last year, I talked quite a little bit about the vehicle to grid and other digital solutions. So could you explain a little bit and where I'm coming from, and you know this a billion times better than I do, because I'm just an amateur when it comes to this, is the fact that, as you mentioned, alluded to earlier, you know, you're not driving your car 24/7. And I think on average, in urban centers like, you know, Tokyo or Hong Kong or Beijing, you're probably driving your car 5-10% of the time, 10% maximum. So 90% yeah. to 95% of the time, your car is doing nothing. And that's where the digital solutions come in. So can you talk a little bit about those digital solutions? And is there anything else out there?
The key thing, so let's talk about, you know, the key driver behind this sort of vehicle to grid business model, and then using the batteries, you know, of the car, right? You know, it's actually because, you know, the electricity prices, you know, in many markets actually varies by the time that you get the electricity. Now Hong Kong is actually not that case, right? You know, Hong Kong is actually 24/7, you know, the electricity prices is the same. But in many of the other markets, you know, there's actually peak tariff and trough tariff, you know, depending on the timing. In a lot of the places, you know, the electricity is more expensive, you know, during peak hours, which is during the day, you know, when all the factories are opening, you know, they're running all the business, et cetera, et cetera. So that's peak tariff. Whereas, you know, at night, you know, all the factories close down and things like that, you know, then the electricity, you know, cost is lower. This is, you know, all to do with, you know, the power generation, you know, the power plants, right? You know, how they operate and how they manage the grid and supply and demand, you know, et cetera, right? So this is the fundamental economic difference here, right? You know, the idea is, you know, you charge up the car, right? Using the car's battery, you know, as a storage at the lower, you know, tariff rate. And then using that to power either the car or even your home or other places, you know, where electricity demand is there, right? At the peak hours. So you don't have to, you actually don't need to get the power off the grid, under peak tariffs. So that is essentially, you know, the benefits, you know, in terms of, you know, using the vehicle to grid and the sort of integrated, charging solution. So there has to be a few components to this, right? You know, the charging system needs to be able to, you know, work with the car, with a smart, you know, connection, so it can actually determine what's the right time to charge the car. And then, you know, it actually has to have the vehicle to grid, you know, sort of technology to release the power back, you know, to either the grid or through the charger or back to, you know, other, you know, electricity usages, right? So these sort of solutions, you know, it's not new, you know, it's already out there. There are quite a few solutions that are already out there. I guess, you know, the key thing is, right, and you're working out the right business case, right? And you know, also, you know, from a consumer perspective, you know, they would not do the calculation in some way. All they want to do is, you know, how can I save money? And you know, it's a matter of how does this, you know, sort of happen, you know, automatically, you know, with the right way, you know, right setup, and making it, you know, opaque to the consumer. The consumer, you know, just sit there and, you know, everything, you know, can be done for them, you know, through a digital system, right? It can be done. And I think, you know, a lot of operators, you know, around the world are, you know, sort of looking at these sort of technologies. But as I said, I think the fundamental here is really the arbitraging of the tariff in terms of electricity, and then right. The opportunity has to be there in order for such a business case to make sense.
And I think in some of the markets they're also looking at the batteries in the electric vehicles as a storage facility for renewable energy, so that. We all know that when there's no wind power, when there's no sun, there's no solar power. And the other way around is, there's a lot of wind being generated, but not a lot of demand, and you need to store it somewhere. So I think in some markets, they're also looking at that. Although for Hong Kong, it's still early days, given that we're quite, behind relative to other neighboring jurisdictions in terms of the development of our renewable energy. But moving on to the, for lack of a better expression, money side of things, can we talk a little bit about the first in general? And again, we'll get into your company in a minute, but I was thinking of asking you about, what are the kind of revenue models for for the EV charging business? Are there some models that are more interesting than others? I'm not talking about necessarily the business model of your company, but just in general, just from a 30,000 feet. And again, I appreciate that different markets, like a deregulated market or a regulated market, obviously will have different revenue models. But could you talk a little bit about the revenue models for EV charging?
I think alluding to earlier, there are typically two sides of the model, right? Whereas there is one side, it's the project based or solution based model, right? So a lot of the vendors, hardware, builders, or the software providers, right? They come up with a solution on EV, right? Be it hardware, be it software, or be it integrated. Or be it on the construction side, right? And they sell it to others, right? And then make a project revenue out of that, right?
Mm.
That is a big market in and of itself. And many of the countries, particularly when we're talking about the build out phase, of the infrastructure, this side of the equation is definitely a major growth area, for a lot of the companies. So this is one typical business model. Then on the other side, is the recurring B2C sort of business, the typical CPO charge point operator business, where the company, the CPOs will be making the investments themselves, right? Mm. Be on the infrastructure themselves, and also the software, and also the sales and marketing that is right. needed to run the operations, and then they charge the consumer, right? So this is the recurring model. This is the model that a lot of the new startups are actually adopting right now, across the globe, looking at EV charging infrastructure, your provision of these sort of service.
Mm-mm.
Now, there are many variations to how to play around with this sort of B2C business, right? For us, for example, we have two ways of charging our customers at this point, right? There is the opportunistic, sort of fast charging, where in our terminology, we call it Cornerstone Go. Mm-hmm. Where we are at a platform where we install chargers at various public locations, right? These are the shopping malls, these are the public car parks, right? These are the event venues, hotels, etc. So when the car comes in, they take a certain amount of electricity, and we charge by the amount of electricity that they consume. Right, so this is sort of one typical model. Many of the charging operators are actually using across the world.
Mm-mm-mm.
Another model that we have, right, is what we call the Cornerstone Home. This is a private charger network where your the chargers that we've installed is actually in private residential buildings or commercial buildings, you know, private spaces. Mm-hmm. So these can be your car park spaces that has been bought up in the condominium, by the resident, right? This can be a sort of a monthly rental car park space, in a commercial building, for example, right? So these are private spaces where one specific car it's going into, right? And so there is a dedicated charger for that EV alone, right? This provides a lot of convenience, and also the most importantly, the guarantee of the availability of the charger, right? To the EV owner, and to a lot of EV owner, this is actually quite important, right? For that, right? They don't want to have that what we call the range anxiety, and saying my battery is going down to 20%, will I be able to get a charging, right? And having that certainty of the charger in their own home, in their own workplace, gives them a lot of comfort. So the way then we charge it is we invest in the infrastructure, and then we sort of rent it and take it on a monthly subscription basis,
right?
For the EV owner, right? So this is no different to your broadband service. Where the broadband service give you the broadband signal and give you the modem and give you all those things, right? We are the same, right? We give you the charger, we give you electricity, we give you insurance, we give you the sort of after sales service and everything in that one package on a monthly subscription basis. So that is another interesting model that we are adopting, and we are pushing that quite aggressively. Now, obviously, there is a synergy across the two models that I talk about, the Cornerstone Home and Cornerstone Go, because the way we actually conduct it is that the Cornerstone Home user can actually use their credit that is purchased through the home subscription plan on the Go network, right? So it actually makes it doubly attractive for them to have a home charger. But they can, if they can't use up their unit, and if they have the need, for example, to top up, outside, they can also top up online, right? Then this makes it a good proposition for EV owners. And these are some of the business model that we as a company are adopting on, and I can see quite a lot of the other companies are actually doing a similar thing,
right
now. Then one sort of variation, sort of to this, and many of the companies are looking at is actually, going the asset light route, because theoretically, we don't need to own all the hardware and EV infrastructure ourselves. It can be owned by another asset partner. They own the charger, they will take the charging income, as well as the parking income and all those things, right? And for us, we leverage the platform, the app that we have already put up, to serve them, just like an Uber or a Deliveroo, charging. So it's actually a win-win for everybody, right? Because the consumer will be able to see where are the charges, whether they are available or not. This in turn actually drive business to the EV charger owners who may not get the business, if they do not put up their charges onto a platform, because they won't be able to reach the consumer that easily. And then for us, we just take a platform fee in between. This is a variation to sort of the typical CPO investments that we have been talking about. And I think again, this is something that we are taking on and trying to develop. We see this as a way to help the various different players in the ecosystem to really grow together.
Before we get into some of the more nitty-gritties on your company, Vincent, I wanted to know a little bit more about the whole kind of financing side of things. You know, how does the sector attract capital? And here I'm referring to, you know, the small to medium-sized companies, not the giants like I don't know, a CLP in Hong Kong or a State Grid Corporation in China or a BMW. Is financing an issue? What are the challenges there?
I think now there are a lot of good things that are sort of, you know, positive to this sector, right? I think the whole industry, the investments communities focus on ESG is actually making EV charging, you know, as a, you know, big positive, right? You know, because we are a very, you know, sort of clear cut, you know, ESG, you know, company, right? Where we are directly contributing to the reduction of emission, right? And so you know, this is definitely a big plus from a ESG investment perspective. On the other hand, ultimately, right? You know, if we are looking at EV charging, you know, it's an infrastructure play, right? It's a asset heavy sort of business, right? Mm-hmm. You know, as you mentioned earlier, right? You know, this is the equivalent of, you know, petrol station, you know, in the old days, right? So you know, when we are talking about the investments, when we are talking about the return horizon, right? You know, it's not like you're getting huge business and then you get money back, you know, in 12 months, right? You know, it's not like that, right? Typically, if we are talking about installing a station and or you're building the infrastructure for a whole residential estate, for example, right? We are talking about your period of return of 4 to 5 years, right? So you know, this has to play to the investors, your sort of investment horizon, right? Typically, you know, long-term investors, you know, would, you know, they are okay, right? 4 or 5 years, looking at a stable return afterwards, you know, that's the good thing. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, you know, what playing against that, it's, you know, for these type of players, they usually don't invest into small startups. Right. So that is sort of your catch 22, right? You know, they we need players to look for long term. To accept that sort of return. On the other hand, you know, they probably look for something, you know, that is bigger. Whereas, you know, for those, you know, smaller investments, you know, PEs or VCs, you know, who are typically looking at smaller investments, right? They would want to have more immediate return and shorter, you know, sort of investment horizon. So you know, as I said, you know, this is a bit of a catch 22 in terms of, you know, finding the investors with the right vision and with the right profile to sort of, you know, getting into a business where, yes, you know, short term there will be a bit of growth, but ultimately, you know, we are talking about, you know, building a long term infrastructure player, you know, with a steady return on a medium to long term basis. And so, you know, that I guess, you know, is sort of the challenge, you know, for us. And this is, you know, that's why I think, you know, from our perspective, you know, we are having that sort of a complete, you know, business model where we have the short term, you know, project revenue, you know, coming in. So we don't have to, you know, have a long investment horizon and right. Rely on the recurring model. Right, you know, before that sort of ramps up, we have these sort of short term, you know, project based, you know, revenue and profit that is coming in, and you know, that will actually help to, you know, at least, you know, solve some of the sort of long term, short term, cash flow, you know, dilemma that we sort of, you know, talk about. I think we're getting a lot of interest. I think we're getting a lot of interest from investors. But I think, you know, the current overall environment, you know, as you and, you know, everybody would know, you know, it's challenging. I think, you know, a lot of people, you know, in China, in Asia, or across the globe, you know, are, you know, fairly conservative right now, you know, because of the overall outlook of the market. But I think your asset, right? Your if you know, somebody is looking for an ESG type of investment, you know, with a very sort of certain growth potential, EV charging is definitely, one of the top areas to look at.
Right. And I mean, I think it's not just the kind of EV charging business, but it happens with renewable energy projects as well. I mean, if Joseph Jacobelli tries to get financing for a 1 megawatt solar plant, even though it's got a very good impact investment outcome, maybe helping the local community or whatever it is, financing 1 megawatt is going to be very difficult. If on the other hand, I'm trying to finance 1 gigawatt, the difference between $1 million and $1 billion, it's a lot easier. So it's kind of like the challenge that you see throughout and it's something which is kind of slowing down decarbonization as far as I'm concerned. I'm interested in exploring a couple of more areas. One is when it comes to the EV charging business, investors, analysts will think about, the risk elements, because obviously, the higher the risk, the higher the return that you require. So could you very briefly address some of the kind of top line concerns that some people have about the EV charging business in general? And I've got six altogether, so I'll go through them quickly. First of all, what do you think about government support? Is that a real risk?
I think government support it sort of goes to the overall fundamental demand, right? EV charging only works if there are EVs that are out there. It really depends on the number of EV pickup, right? I think the government, a lot of the governments, across the globe, and even in the Asia region, it's pushing hard on EVs, right? But the amount of incentive that they are putting out for people to buy EV will still directly affect in terms of the amount of EV being sold. Right. Yeah. Recently, the US, for example, has sort of lowered the incentive a bit, and people have already have some sort of doubt in terms of whether EV will pick up as quickly as it was.
Right.
So I think that is sort of the big thing, really around the potential risk. But I think to be quite honest, there's another factor, which is sort of mitigating that, right? It's like in China, right? A lot of the incentives, on buying EV are slowly being, factored out.
Mm.
On the other hand, because all the car brands, all the big brands are actually, pushing for EVs. There are more and more choices of EVs, and there are less and less choices, of ICEs. Internal combustion engine cars, right? And because of the cost of EVs are actually coming down, and the gas prices are coming up, people are making savings, by actually switching to EVs, and so therefore, that's sort of partly alleviate the risk of the government taking away incentives in buying EVs.
Another one is there a problem of competing charging infrastructures, or that's not really an issue? Because as you mentioned earlier, you've got AC, you've got DC, and there's no real competing infrastructure when it comes to EV charging. It's just pretty straightforward.
I think from a technology perspective, I don't see big leapfrogging of any sort. The competition is more on the various different operators. Whether there is a sort of overbuilding of infrastructure, having too many chargers that are out there. In many of the markets across Asia, that is definitely not the case. Mm. In fact, a lot of the Asian markets, they are still lacking a lot of EV chargers. The market utilization is still fairly high.
Right. And I mean, I've got a whole bunch of other ones, but I think the last one I think is quite crucial is about cybersecurity. So you as an EV operator or any EV operator has to be able to communicate with a plug so that how much electricity you're selling. And I suppose you have to be connected to the electric power company as well.
Is there a cyber security issue there or risk for on that side of the business?
I think now currently all the or most of the chargers that we are operating ourselves are actually connected to our own backend. And you know, we don't obviously store the consumer information per se, right? We do need to work with payment operators, you know, to have payment information going back and forth. So I think, you know, we still have to go through, you know, some of the standard, you know, cybersecurity auditing to ensure, you know, we are transferring these sort of information in a safe and sound way. So that's the first thing. Secondly, I think, you know, what we have done is actually, you know, all our backend is running on a cloud server. I think, you know, this is one of the great sort of, you know, technology myth where, you know, many people are saying, you know, why are you actually putting things on cloud? You know, is there a higher risk in terms of, you know, cybersecurity risk on, you know, having things on cloud? Why don't you have your own sort of private server and things like that, right? You know, the way, you know, we look at it is, you know, the amount of money that we can spend on, you know, protecting our server is probably, you know, 1 trillionth of, you know, what you know, Amazon can actually put in in protecting their service, right? You know, Google, you know, Amazon, you know, all these cloud players, you know, they are spending so much on cybersecurity to ensuring your their data is actually being protected. So I would actually argue, you know, having things on the cloud server is actually safer. But you know, obviously we need to be diligent around it. You know, we have to, you know, as said, you know, we do our own cybersecurity audits, you know, around our software, our apps, to ensure, you know, we are handling information, you know, in a sensitive way.
Right. No, and I do think it's going to be an interesting discussion when, you know, people do more with the EV charging infrastructure. I mean, like once you get into vehicle to grid, you know, where you've got a two-way communication, et cetera, it's gonna be quite an interesting conversation there. Now, if we can get into, you know, your company, Cornerstone Technologies, if we can start a little bit with, you know, what about the history and because I think it's quite interesting for listeners of the Asia Climate Finance podcast to understand, you know, Cornerstone Technologies as a case study of a startup business, which is actually quite key to, you know, the energy transition, quite key to decarbonization. And this is how I view at least the EV charging business. So could you start a little bit very briefly with, you know, the company history and background and, you know, how it all got started?
So the company was actually formed in 2016. So the company has been around for, you know, 7 years or so. You know, it was, you know, founded, you know, with a small technology team looking at developing, you know, an AC charger specifically, you know, for urban markets. You know, that was, you know, sort of the initial aim, right? You know, EV was, you know, at that time is still, you know, relatively, you know, up and coming industry. Very few EVs are out there in Hong Kong yet. But, you know, everybody knows sort of, you know, that's the way to go. So I think the founding team was actually very visionary in terms of, you know, picking an area and, you know, going with it. To be quite honest, I think, you know, in the first few years, you know, it you know, takes a bit of time to really take off. Because back in the days, you know, 2016, again, you know, the market was actually quite small and there were very few sort of people, you know, looking at the market at that point. Then come around, you know, 2019 or 2020 or so, you know, the industry demand starts to rise. So you know, I think, you know, our current, you know, major shareholders right now, you know, and there are, you know, three investors, you know, private investors, you know, in Hong Kong, you know, they have, you know, they have the vision to see, you know, this is really, an area of growth going forward. And they have, you sort of acquired the company, or a lot of the majority control, from the founding team, and then injected the company into a Jamboard listed vehicle. So now we are actually Cornerstone Technology is actually listed on the Jamboard in Hong Kong right now on Hong Kong Stock Exchange. So that was 2020. Then the market sort of really start to take off, with a lot of interest in 2021. I actually only joined the company at 2021, at the end of 2021. And that was when the shareholders feeling this is now really a good time to push. To have a big push in terms of the industry growth, right? It catches the sort of the growth rate of the EV industry. At that time, Tesla has just launched it, the Model 3 and Model Y. It has sort of taken the market by storm, right? It has become the best selling car in Hong Kong. Period, right? It's not just the best selling EV, but really it's the best selling car, right? It has an EV, in 2022, actually, takes up about half the whole overall Hong Kong new car market. In 2021, 2022, the shareholders, brought me in and we're looking at, really to grow the company. In a rapid manner, in many of the markets. So in Hong Kong, we've started that way, and really pushing it and trying to get to a market leading position. And by the end of, 2022, we have, already started to go beyond Hong Kong and expand ourselves, into Southeast Asia. So we have formed the two JVs, one in Cambodia, one in Thailand already. We have opened it our first station in Cambodia in November last year. We are going to open our first operation in Thailand this year, in the next few months or so. And we are also starting our business in Indonesia and Malaysia as well. So Southeast Asia, again, it's a major growth market for us. That sort of, bring us to where we are, to become, we are definitely one of the larger players, in Hong Kong in terms of EV charging solution. And at the same time, we have the aspiration to become, one of the biggest in Asia.
Right. So the kind of growth model, because obviously in Hong Kong, the limit is going to be number one, how many, electric vehicles actually come onto the roads and when, and the replacement rate, and to the at least in Hong Kong, I guess another limitation is they still get a lot of bureaucratic government permitting permits. As far as I recall, but plus the fact that just to share a really boring story, when I tried to get an EV back in 2018 or 2019. Sorry, no, that was even earlier than that. That was like 2016. Talk to the power company. The power company say, yeah, sure, no problem. And it was the owners of the building. So in Hong Kong, we've got this these committees, which I'm sure you have in other countries as well, but the owners form a committee. And because me and another person were the only ones that wanted to get EVs, they said, well, we're not going to pay for your infrastructure, whatever it is. And the whole discussion, it was a lack of knowledge. And I think 5-6 years onwards, the situation has improved a little bit, but not a huge amount. So I think there's going to be a little bit more growth still in Hong Kong because of these, the government processes being hopefully a little bit more efficient going forward in terms of approvals. And also the market knowledge, market understanding that if you get a power line to charge your EV in your car in the car park of the building, other people are not going to be paying for your electricity, but you're going to pay for it. But I think the growth in in other markets is very interesting, particularly because you're going from a developed market, i.e. Hong Kong, which is not saturated, which has still got growth, as I mentioned, but still it is a developed market, to really, you know, developing markets like Thailand and Malaysia, to almost, you know, emerging markets like Cambodia. So could you talk a little bit about your kind of growth strategies a little bit more, and you know, is it just going to be a volume gain?
I think, you know, for us, right, you know, our experience in Hong Kong actually, you know, helped us to, you know, refine our product, both in terms of hardware and software, you know, and the, you know, model of service, you know, to the EV community. I think what we have learned is actually, you know, the you know, primarily urban market, right, that we are talking about here. In Hong Kong, you know, it's quite, you know, unique, you know, in sort of this, you know, Asian point of view, you know, kind of way, right? You know, if you are looking at the US, if you are looking at the Europe, you know, when people are living in houses, you know, they have their own garage and, you know, all those things, right? Then the whole sort of charging model, you know, and charging infrastructure, you know, is very different, from, you know, the condominium base, you know, sort of big housing estate base, you know, sort of set up where you will is, you know, very common in Hong Kong and across all these Asian cities. And so therefore, you know, we have developed, you know, unique ways, you know, that we feel, you know, can be, you know, deployed, you know, across the urban regions, you know, across Asia. And you know, that's the model that we are taking on, right? So you know, using, you know, the experience that we have learned to develop the platform in terms of hardware and software, then work with, you know, work with some local, you know, partners, right? Because, you know, we fully understand that you know, every market, you know, in Asia, you know, has its own, you know, unique, you know, ways of, you know, conducting business, you know, yes, networks and things like that. So we can't go in alone, right? Mm-hmm. So we go in with a local partner, and then you're working with the local partner to identify sites, you know, to invest into building out the infrastructure, or finding deals, you know, where we can actually sell a solution, mm-hmm. It's a, you know, complete, you know, one-stop shop, right? And you're really, you're using these to grow our business. As said, I think, you know, we do believe, you know, we have a unique advantage in terms of, you know, we are an operator ourselves, so we have actually gained a lot of insight and knowledge in terms of, you know, what does it take, right, to build up a good, you know, sort of EV infrastructure. And that help us to actually, you know, either serve, you know, clients in other markets, you know, or you work with our partners, you know, to sort of develop the right solution, you know, for those markets. From an economic, you know, standpoint, right, you know, as you mentioned, I think, you know, Hong Kong, you know, it's a developed market, but, you know, there's still plenty room of growth for a number of EVs that are out there. But ultimately, right, you know, Hong Kong is just one city, and you know, the number of, you know, cars that are in here is limited to, you know, the population, right? Whereas, you know, if you look at Thailand, look at Malaysia, look at Indonesia, you know, the overall, you know, number of vehicles, you know, on the street are, you know, significantly higher. So the potential is definitely there. And so, you know, from a volume, from a numbers game, you know, we do want to tackle those markets. Cambodia, you know, or other emerging markets, you know, they have their own advantages as well, right? You know, I would say, right, you know, the journey, you know, that is being taken up by these sort of markets are actually, you know, very different from a Hong Kong perspective, right? If you look at Cambodia right now, right, you know, it's similar to, you know, probably China, you know, 15, 20 years ago, right? They are starting to develop their you know, various sectors, you know, including manufacturing, including their services, you know, with their tourism and things like that, right? And really a sort of middle class is rising, you know, out of it, right? And what do the middle class buy, you know, when they, you know, get the money, right? You know, the first thing that they will get is to buy a car. Right. the other hand, when they are buying a car, the first car that they will buy nowadays is actually an EV, right? It's not that they are going to buy a gas car and then switch to an EV in 5-10 years time, right? You know, right. And so there is a bit of a, you know, sort of jumping through the technology, right? And we are, you know, no longer, you know, serving, you know, we are serving an emerging, you know, sort of a middle class segment that, you know, they're buying their own car. That is what we're looking at. So you know, we have a lot of, you know, positive optimism, you know, over you know these sort of emerging markets, you know, simply because you know, EV is going to be the dominant infrastructure going forward.
Right. Just before we conclude, you know, this has been a fantastic conversation, but I think it's about time I ask you one tough question, just one single one. If you're going from Hong Kong and you really signed up, you know, Cambodia and Thailand, and you're looking at other markets, is there a risk that, you know, you're overexpanding too fast, knowing that, as you mentioned earlier, I mean, at the end of the day, we're talking about long duration assets, long-term investments. Your returns are not over, you know, like a tech company, like over 6 months or a year, but it's over 4, 5, 6 years. Is there an overexpansion kind of risk, or, you know, going too quickly, too far, or you feel comfortable with that?
I think, you know, if we're looking at the way that we're expanding, you know, as I mentioned, right, you know, we never think about going alone. You know, in some of these, you know, market expansion, and you know, it's part of, you know, what I mentioned, right? You know, then there needs to be a bit of local know-how, right? You know, across all these Asian markets, and at the same time, right? You know, there is also, you know, a realistic question around investments, right? Yeah. You know, that's why, you know, we are finding JV partners who are willing to sort of, you know, work with us and invest with us together. You know, they are looking, you know, having, you know, share the vision, you know, with us in terms of investing into the sector.
Right.
So that is sort of, you know, helping us in terms of, you know, growing, you know, in a more controlled manner. I think that's one thing, right? And then, you know, we are also looking at, you know, investments, you know, in Hong Kong even. And you know, we need to, you know, be creative around how we actually, you know, work in our investments, right? You know, as I mentioned, right? We you know, even in Hong Kong, we are working with asset partners where, you know, we, you know, some of the asset, obviously we invest ourselves, you know, some of the asset, you know, would have investment partners to buy into asset, and we provide them with a regular return. And you know, there are people, you know, with that sort of investment horizon, right? And you know, that will help us grow our network without burdening us too much in terms of the financial resources. We still need funding, obviously,
right?
But at the same time, I think, you know, we are using different ways and creative structure to ensure, you know, we are growing and in the right pace. I think at the end of the day, you know, the overall EV market, you know, in EV, you know, infrastructure market, the potential everybody can see, right?
Right.
In this sort of, you know, market environment, it's difficult to find a sector where, you know, the growth is so certain, right? To some extent, right? You know, the only way is up, right? For EVs, because, you know, another industry is coming down, which is the traditional, you know, gas and petrol, you know, and if you look at the gas and petrol, petroleum industry, right? You know, across the world or even in this region, right? It's such a huge business, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, just replacing your 20% of it, you know, it's already a big enough pie, you know, for a lot of players, right? So for us, you know, it's not about capturing everything, but it's working with people who share the same vision to sort of, you know, capture the market together.
And it's really interesting how, you know, when you go out to these other countries, I mean, and I'm not putting words into your mouth, but it's my own interpretation, to be clear, is that, you know, you're not just bringing in the capital, because at the end of the day, you know, well, you know, people who have capital can invest capital, but you also bring in the experiences from Hong Kong. There's a know-how, there's a technological knowledge as well, apart from the operational one. So that's quite interesting. And just one point about the EV markets. I mean, I'm probably one of the most bullish people out there. I think it's a sector that people love to criticize. I mean, in Europe, what people complain about is not enough charging points. And that's great, because it means once you have more charging points, guess what? You know, more people are going to get EVs. But it makes so much more sense, you know, less maintenance, less noise, pollution. I mean, you know, the whole decarbonization thing, et cetera. So to me, the growth is immense. Vincent, this has been a really, really great conversation. Can we do a little bit of a wrap up? Some final thoughts, some insights from you, some outlook about some technology and about the EV charging market in general?
I think, as mentioned, the EV market, is really trending up, from many perspectives, right? The environmental impact, the environmental emission, decrease and reduction sort of potential, is really tremendous, right? And this is fundamentally, doing good, to the society and, to the world. So this is one of the key things that we are interested in the sector. So that's a good thing, right? But if we're just looking at the business, if we are looking at the fundamentals, right? As said, right? It is not easy, nowadays to find an industry where, the growth is so certain, right? Mm-hmm. With the ESG benefits as well, right? A lot of the investor, should be, looking into this sector. Mm. And I think with this sector, it's still in the early days. Many people have been buying into the EV companies, right? Tesla stock prices has skyrocketed. Mm. Nowadays, if you look at BYD or the other EV players, they are getting a lot of investment attentions. On the other hand, EV infrastructure, it's a bit sort of under the radar still. But if you actually ask all the drivers, right, what is the most important factor when they are considering buying an EV, right? We have actually done a survey ourselves, right? Over 60% of the prospective EV car EV buyers, right? Their number one concern is actually whether they would have the EV charging facilities available to them. Mm-hmm. And as you said, right, a lot of people are actually complaining, about the lack of EV charging infrastructure in many market across. So this is actually good news for us. It means that there is actually plenty of demand that is going around that is unfulfilled. And so therefore, we do see, a significant way up, for the industry. Then it's about, finding the right model. I think, it's building the right connection with the consumers, building the right, sort of communication, education to the potential partners, right? Like the, real estate developers, like the building committees, like the car owners, right? To build that ecosystem. And we are really, at the center and the forefront of it. And this is very exciting. That's why, I'm so interested, and so excited, about the work that we are doing. So that's great. I hope, there will be more people who will be interested in the sector and spending more attention around this, and more resources will be going into this. Let's hope that with more EV chargers, more EVs that will be out there, on the market, making the world a greener, cleaner place.
Yeah, and I think the whole EV range anxiety is sometimes a little bit I don't want to be nasty about it, but a little bit funny, because I mean, some of these cars today, you can actually drive for 500 kilometers before you need a charge. And given places like Hong Kong, I think if I'm correct, The average speed altogether is about 25 kilometers, and the average range is about 25 kilometers per hour is the average speed, and the average range is about 25 kilometers per day. So you know, but you, everybody, you know, like I don't know about you, but I want to have my telephone charge 100% all of the time, right?
Yes.
Which is actually bad for the phone. But you've got these. So it's the education element, I think, is quite important. Well, Vincent, I would like to really, really thank you. You've been very, very generous with your insights and with your time. And so thank you very, very much for participating in the Asia Climate Finance Podcast.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me.
I hope you did enjoy this episode of the Asia Climate Finance Podcast. I would really appreciate any feedback, topic ideas, etc. My contact is in the show notes. Thank you.